Hello, friends, and welcome to the show. You know, right now, we are living in a time of radical upheaval, and many of you who are listening to this podcast today are really stressed about our future. We don't like to date stamp our podcast, but we're going to do it. Today is Thursday, the 19th of March. The year is 2020. COVID-19 is on everybody's mind. And right now, if you are an HR professional, you are either trying to figure out how to make all of this work in a very upheaval scenario, or you're at home wondering what the heck you're going to do next, or maybe you don't even have a job. Either way, things are not really comfortable right now. Well, I understand that. And as an HR professional, you are one of the leaders in your organization, somebody that has to be able to take charge. So this episode is for you. Now, I went ahead and recorded this for the Boss Builder podcast, our sister station. I thought it would be relevant for you. So our guest today is Jeremy Evans. Jeremy is the principal consultant with Constant Consulting. Jeremy is a very good friend of mine. We've done some work together. Jeremy can really speak to this subject. He actually made the choice to fire his boss and start his own company the first of this year. Now, there is no worse time on the planet to start a business than now. So what he teaches, he is living and he is surviving and he's doing well. He's going to give you strategies to help you get your organization through these changes. Because at some point, things are going to go back to a normal, most likely a new normal, and you have to be ready to handle it. Lots of practical tips in this one, so make sure that you're going to take good notes. And why don't we just quit talking about him? Let's talk to him. You know what to do. Take that personal item, make sure it's tucked up underneath the seat in front of you. Make sure that seatbelt is fastened. And oh, by the way, use your wet wipe to wipe it all down. Buckle up. It's time to take off.
Should the cabin lose pressure, oxygen masks will drop from the overhead area. Please place the mask over your own mouth and nose before assisting others.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the HR Oxygen Podcast, the show focused on the overworked, overwhelmed, and underappreciated HR professional. And now, here is the host of our show, the Boss Builder, Mac Monroe.
Well, Jeremy, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, Mac. It's good to be chatting with you again.
Yeah, I think we had you on Boss Builder podcast, at least. It's been, what, over a year, I guess?
Yeah, about a year and a half or so. So I know you and I have talked quite a few times in between, but as far as being a guest in the show, it sounds about right.
Yeah, well, for the people that, so I think we ran yours, we talked about the Insights Discovery.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, and so that was on Boss Builder podcast because of the nature of, you know, where we are today. So I don't like to date stamp podcasts, but today is Wednesday, March the 25th. The year is 2020, and there's people running around with runny noses, I heard, and with no toilet paper. My goodness, what has happened to this planet, right?
It's crazy. It really is. And I'll share that I actually went on a cruise a few weeks ago, and it was
Are you serious? You went on a cruise. You went on a cruise.
Went on a cruise.
A global pandemic.
It was in one of those periods of time where there was a little bit of concern in the United States, but not a great deal. So hadn't really kind of blown up in the news yet. We'd had this vacation planned for several months, and so we were looking forward to it. And we live in Ohio, so after several months of fall and winter and gray, you know, dreary days, we said, let's get in the sunshine and this is going to be fantastic. And so we ended up going on the cruise. We had some sun. We had some fun. Really great stuff. But when we pulled back into port and we finally got our phones turned back on and we could see what was happening in the world, oh my goodness, it's like waking up from a coma. It's like one of those zombie movies where, you know, where'd everybody go? Why are the stores all closed? Why are the kids out of school for 3 weeks? And it was just, it was an incredible experience to be kind of coming back to a world that had changed so dramatically in such a short period of time.
So you really did not even check, because I've been on cruises and they've got internet, they've got TVs, and there's always everybody walking around with a phone in their hands. You had no idea how drastic things had become.
I had no idea. The only idea we had was the day before the cruise got back into port. The day before we got back in, I was on an elevator and one of the guests was talking about, I think the NBA or NCAA tournament being canceled. And I said, are you serious? You know, how's that possible? What am I going to do for the next 3 weeks at home? And so I learned a little bit there, but I thought it might just be isolated to large scale public events like a basketball game. Had no idea that it was going to affect us literally in our daily lives. So yeah, it was the word I've used with a lot of friends and colleagues has been surreal. It's really been a surreal situation.
Well, I bet your kids were just devastated knowing that they weren't going to go back to school after a week on a cruise ship, huh?
It was heartbreaking to tell them, hey kids, your spring break is going to last another 3 weeks. So being 15 and 11, you can imagine the devastation that they felt.
Oh, Lord. Well, guess what's going to happen if this blows over and they end up running school all the way through the end of next year, right? Then it's like paybacks with interest.
That's right. We told them sooner or later, you're going to have to make it up. So.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we just can't have a society, you know, 50 years from now. Why is your IQ lower? Well, for one whole year, we didn't go to school.
We just never learned polynomials. So sorry.
That's right. It just wasn't going to happen that year. But well, you know, I guess it's pretty appropriate that we're going to chat together. So when we did the other interview on Boss Builder, and the reason I'm saying that is I'm probably going to run this on HR Oxygen as well, our sister station. But you were working for a company. That's how we got to know each other. We'd done a few things together, and then you started your business. Mm-hmm. And man, you picked a good time to fire your boss and start a business.
It's amazing. And I thought that I had everything worked out. And really, when I look back on it, I'm not sure that I would change because there's always an excuse not to do something. There's always a reason not to. And the way I figure it is, if I can get through this, then the rest of my consulting career is going to be easy street, right? So
you'll certainly have a powerful story when you get on the Shark Tank, right?
Exactly.
The Evans document or whatever you're going to create, you know. And I have to agree with you. You know, starting a business like people have done in the past, let's just say 3 years, mm-hmm. the economy turned on fire. Mm-hmm. You know, then that would be the time to do it. I have seen people on LinkedIn that said, you know, things are going so well and my savings are up, so I think now's the time to take a year off work and go around the world. Mm-hmm. Boy, okay, I have a feeling you're going to regret that, but you're right. If you wait until everything's perfect, you may not ever get there.
Right.
And again, if you can do it now, then there's really no excuse for anybody else. And so you've done a lot of things in your career, Jeremy, and I want you to tell us about your path, mm-hmm. and then let's lead that up to what your main focus is today with your business.
Definitely. So my focus in my career, and I take this all the way back to being an adolescent and a teenager. What I tell people is, hey, I've always been a know-it-all. And so I don't mind, you know, getting in front of people and teaching and facilitating and educating. And so that idea of wanting to learn and really wanting to share things that I've learned and helping others has stuck with me. It's been a core value of mine at a personal level for a long, long time. And in my profession, I've gravitated towards training. I've gravitated towards helping other people learn to do new things, to pick up new skills. And I started out on the technical side, so you know, helping people with troubleshooting and training new sales reps on products and new procedures. And from there, I moved over to what a lot of people, especially in the HR world, you know, hear referred to as soft skills. And it's only when you start getting into that, you realize, boy, there's nothing soft about this. Leading people, managing people, those were really hard things to do. But that's what I gravitated towards about 10 or 12 years ago was more of the personal side of skill development and how do we groom talent? How do we take people through the life cycle of their, you know, of an organization? How do we get new people in the door and, you know, give them the tools and the training and the skills that they need to succeed? And then how do we identify high potentials and give them stretch assignments and bigger challenges and groom them with the not just the skill, but also the ambition and the confidence to reach for new things and to push for, you know, things that they might not be inclined to pursue. And then looking at how do we take the next level of people in our organization, those that are tasked with leading, supervising, and managing others, and how do we give them the tools that they need? And Mac, you've done this for years, so you know exactly, you know, what I'm speaking about. You can't just take a great doer and put them into a managerial role. There's a whole different set of skills that they have to learn. So I've focused on that a bit, but what I've really been drawn to is the idea of we're all ingrained with certain attributes and traits and preferences. And so you talk about insights, and I've used that quite a bit. I've dabbled with Myers-Briggs a little bit, but these days I'm using Everything DISC. And DISC is a very widely known, very popular personality and behavioral styles assessment. And I've been using that quite a bit. And so that's part of the core of my practice right now is based upon using the DISC assessment as a starting point. And what I like to say is, hey, if you take this assessment or if you get this baseline of knowledge, what it is it's the foundation for a dialogue. It's not a diagnosis. You know, nobody's going to get a report or a readout and say, well, hey, I'm a D style, or if it's insights, I'm a red style, or I'm an ENTJ style, or whatever assessment or whatever tool you're using. You can't get that and say, this is what I am. This is the only thing I can do. This is how I'm going to, you know, solve every single problem that comes across. But having that awareness and understanding how you're wired really helps you connect to others. And that's what I try to focus on is how do we use this awareness to be more effective in our interpersonal relationships, to be more effective at resolving conflict in a productive manner? How do we use this to be a better manager? How do we use this to be a better leader of a business? How do we use this to make our team more effective and to overcome some of those obstacles and dysfunctions that are endemic to working on a team? You know, how can I use this to increase my emotional intelligence so that I can be, you know, as effective and productive as possible? And so that's been a lot of my focus. Another part of my focus has also been around the idea of change. And so I've looked at, you know, some of the models that are out there. And especially, like you said, in today's environment, we are faced with a significant and highly disruptive change in our lives. So really, no matter what industry you're in, unless you're selling hand sanitizer, in which time.
Well, now you're just sitting at home because you got no more to sell. Right. And you're as bored as everybody else, yeah. Right?
So, but we're all faced with this highly disruptive change. And, you know, at some point, you know, we're getting through it with a lot of heroic effort. We're focused on kind of defeating this common enemy. But some of the things that'll help us deal with this change are really transferable to dealing with changes that will happen in the future. So no matter, you know, even when COVID-19, coronavirus, whatever subsides, you know, we're still going to have people in new roles. We're still going to have mergers and acquisitions. We're still going to have system implementations. And all those things will create change and disruption in our businesses. And so how do we use some of the tools that are available, like a DISC assessment or like some of the change models that are out there, in order to help us flatten the curve, you know, to borrow from the contemporary vernacular,
the 2020 word of the year, right?
Exactly. So how do we flatten the curve in terms of making those transitions more palatable for people?
And well, you know, it's interesting, Jeremy, because, you know, you mentioned your tech background teaching, you know, what I guess people would call the hard skills, but there is nothing easy about what you've just told us, you know, because I mean, if human beings were like machines, we could just, you know, open up the back like a talking G.I. Joe, you know, cross a few wires and everybody'd be good to go. But
exactly.
There is no wiring diagram. I mean, the closest we can get to a wiring diagram might be a DISC or a Myers-Briggs. Right. But even that, you're dealing with humans just that are physiological beings and then emotional on top of it. So
exactly.
So thankfully, you know, you've got this and you are somebody who's actually already gone through what it's like to be acquired, right?
Exactly. About 6 years ago, I was part of a startup organization that had literally started in a garage. So the three founders had begun this cable manufacturing company back in the early 1980s and grew it, you know, little Dayton, Ohio, grew it to a multi, you know, million-dollar business. And that business was acquired by a larger multinational organization. And so I went through, you know, that period of change. And personally, I went through that transition. So I was able to observe it firsthand and see some of the challenges that people experienced. And I guess you could say we took some lumps. You know, we learned by trial and error. I think many trials and probably more errors. So we learned a little bit of the hard way, and we have some scar tissue and some bruises, you know, that say, hey, if you don't pay attention, you know, in a deliberate and active fashion to how you help your people and your employees get through significant changes, it's going to hurt. The hurt will last longer, and the scars will cut deeper. And so being able to be in front of it and being able to be aware of it and having some strategies and some tools, some practices that you can put into place to help manage not just the dates and the timetables and the project plan of a change initiative, but really being able to reach out to people and meet them where they are and support them as they react to change. That's the secret sauce. That's the key, I think, to a successful change implementation.
And you know what I love about that is that you were part of it. So you were not the one initiating the change. You were the one reacting, which mm-hmm. is where most of these end up going. You know, right. You're reacting to it. But then on top of that, and I don't know, I mean, we've been friends for a while. I mean, I don't know, you know, some what you just said, some of that I wasn't even really aware of, you know, how tough that was. Mm-hmm. But then it seemed to me that things settled down. And, you know, I knew Jeremy as this person in this big company, and it seemed like everything was fine and wonderful. And there were little hints of, mm-hmm. I feel like I need to grow. Mm. And so now you have moved from someone who has been the reactive person to change to a person who has now created your own change.
Yeah.
So for those of us who have never had that experience, what is it like to know that you need to make a change and you know that it's going to be painful, but the pain of staying the same, I'm borrowing from somebody, I don't know, Bennis or Maslow or some of them philosophers, mm-hmm. you know, what is it? The pain of staying the same is greater than the pain of the change.
Yeah.
I probably got that all mixed up.
but I think the sentiment comes through, and you're absolutely right. And part of it is just the natural maturity, you know, as I've grown and gotten older and I've gone through life changes, I've sat and looked at my career and said, well, is this what I want to be doing in 2 years or 5 years or 10 years? And my children are 15 and 11. And so the idea of an empty nest all of a sudden isn't some theoretical, you know, exercise. It's going to be happening in 20 years. You know, it's going to be happening in 8-9 years, you know, or perhaps even shorter than that. And so thinking about, you know, what does my professional legacy need to be? What do I want it to be? And so when I look at that, you know, I realized the joy that I got out of certain parts of my work. And I thought to myself, again, if there's going to be reasons not to do something, I can find them. I can find, you know, the idea of comfort and say, I've got a stable, really good job. I've got challenges, you know, that are fulfilling to me. You know, I've got the support of a great organization, but at the same time, I thought if I really want to make my mark, if I really want to be fulfilled, you know, at a kind of a self-actualization level, I'm going to need to take this chance. I'm going to need to take this leap. And really that's the hardest part. And for anybody who is out there listening, who's an entrepreneur who's ever started their own venture, whether it's a business or maybe kicking off a nonprofit activity or whatever, you understand that starting it is the hardest part. I remember Sean Aker talking about activation energy. What's the hardest part of an exercise regimen? Getting out of bed the first time and getting on the treadmill. So we do the things to make it easy. You know, once you start pushing the car, once that car starts rolling, you know, then it becomes easier to push it down the road. But the activation energy for me was the hard part. And I wrestled with that for probably the better part of 18 months. Through discussions with you and some other mentors in the industry, I realized that I really needed to do this. And at the beginning of this year is when I officially stepped away from my full-time role with my old employer and opened up Constant Consulting. And, you know, as you said, nobody could foresee what 2020 held in store for us. So right now it's a little bit of a challenge, but you know, if I believe what I say in terms of change, then I understand that I have to make changes myself. So that's offering programs virtually. It's being able to meet the needs of the clients and prospects that I'm working with and saying, hey, given the constraints that we've got in our environment, how can we do this using a virtual tool instead of me coming in? Or what are the ways that we can deliver this in a way that, that reaches your people as they're quarantined or under a stay-at-home order? So there's always a solution. It sometimes is a little uncomfortable for us, but if we are able to push through that discomfort and understand that, hey, there's opportunity for us here as well, you know, I think that's been part of the fulfillment for me is saying, I'm not just sitting here going, woe is me. I can't wait for this stay-at-home order to be lifted. But if I say, what can I do? What can I do to be positive and to be proactive in my community? And do things that are helping others, because we're all faced with this. We're all, you know, to some degree in the boat together. And so if I'm finding things that are helpful for me, why not share that? Why not help others as well?
Now, I love your story, Jeremy. And I think what maybe we can take out of that too, is that when you are an employee, whether you're an employee or a manager, you're working for a company and there's a change, I mean, I think you have to keep in mind that somebody somewhere is going through the same mental and emotional wrestling mm-hmm. that you were doing, and they've decided to make a change. And now, unfortunately or fortunately, all managers and employees of the company are going to have to get on board, whether they even knew what was going on.
Exactly.
Before or not. So, I mean, and I don't know how your kids took this. If they were little, they probably wouldn't notice anything. Mm-hmm. But if they were a little older, they might say, Dad, are you out of your mind? Do you realize that you're going to be home a lot more now? And, you know, believe it or not, kids don't like it when their parents are around a lot.
Yeah.
So, you know, again, I think if you're listening to this today, you have to realize that you probably had no say-so in the change. Yeah. And as much as you are struggling with it right now, how much more are the people that work for you? Mm-hmm. So that's what I'd like to talk about today, Jeremy. How do we do that? If we're listening to this and we are the HR professional who, in a time of crisis, this is probably when they're inviting you to the table mm-hmm. and then suddenly they're all ears. Sometimes it takes that to get them to listen to you mm-hmm. Or you're the boss and you have employees who have a lot of uncertainty. You know, you've now seen this as a victim and as also someone who is the catalyst for the change, Jeremy. So what would you recommend for us?
So part of it is just understanding, and I fall back on the Bridges model of change and transition. It's understanding how change affects people at a personal level. And so many times when I've worked with businesses and clients and they talk about change, they describe the change in really very kind of factual or empirical terms. And they say, we're going live with this new ERP system, or we're changing the org structure and we've got a new business unit. And here's what the leadership hierarchy is going to look like. Here's where these people are going to roll up into. Here's how we're going to split up the territories and the work. And it's vital. You've got to have a good change plan. And there's lots of change models out there. Cotter, you know, for instance, uses a very well-known one. You know, and you get a team together, you get people on board, you reinforce the change. There's lots of steps in it. But what I find is that many organizations are really good at that, I call the process side of change. And you've got a really tight Gantt chart that says, here's when we do our user testing, and here's when we flip the switch and go live. And what you find is that on those charts, you really don't see the impact that it has on people. Because you mentioned this earlier, people are baskets full of thoughts and emotions. People can be irrational. People move at their own pace. And especially when it comes to dealing with change, they're going to go through that reaction. They're going to go through that transition at a different speed. And my counsel to leaders, my counsel to people in HR, my counsel to any manager is that typically you know more than your people and you're further down the road to internalizing and adapting and accepting the change than your people. And so sometimes you've got to slow your pace a little bit and look behind you and lend a hand to help them, you know, help them climb up the ladder. So that they're not left behind. And that's an important thing for a lot of us to remember is we can be completely bought into a change. We can see the other side. We can see all the benefits and just the rosiness of what the change is going to look like and what it's going to mean for us in our businesses. But for a lot of other people, they get stuck. They get stuck at earlier levels. And the first thing that people will go through when they experience a change is a loss. And this can be something where people can get stuck on what they have lost and really not be able to see the benefits. They can't see the better outcomes. They can't see the payoff. And if we're not able to acknowledge and deal with those losses, it creates friction. We lose productivity. Sometimes we lose people as a result of it. We lose engagement. There's a lot of hazards that come about if we're not able to be cognizant of those losses and then take proper measures to address them. So that's really the first thing that I start with is, hey, the change is going to be great. This new system that you're implementing is going to be fantastic. And this acquisition is going to be beneficial for everybody. But at the same time, somebody is losing something. We're all losing something. What is it? Let's identify that. Let's be very clear and take an inventory and say, what are the things that people might lose? And the losses aren't always completely dramatic. Sometimes they're temporary versus permanent. Sometimes they are intangible versus tangible, but they still hurt the same way. So we just have to have a little bit of emotional intelligence, a little bit of empathy, and reach people in different ways. And this is where an assessment or a tool like DISC or MBTI or Myers-Briggs can be helpful, or insights can be helpful, because then we can understand, here's what I have been dealing with. Here's my approach by default. How might I need to modify that approach to help these other people on my team?
Well, let's talk about that loss. And so this has baffled me to this day. And maybe from where you sit, you can diagnose it. I mean, you've heard my story about my evil boss, mm-hmm. Captain Davies, back in the 90s. And that man, every day was hell with this man. And then on the day that he was mercifully fired, I had already been relocated to the IT department. I fully expected all those technicians that were underneath his rule for that 2 years it'd be like when Saddam was kicked out. They were, knocking the statues over, mm-hmm. and dancing in the streets and slapping the pictures of him with their sandals. And you wouldn't believe it, but everybody was upset.
Right.
I thought, what is wrong with you people? The dictator is gone. You are now free. And for the life of me, I couldn't understand why they were all experiencing this sense of loss.
Sure.
How would you explain that, Jeremy?
So part of that might be, what that leader was doing for those other people, where you might have seen that leader as very controlling, micromanaging, very hands-on, and you felt stifled, didn't have enough autonomy. Your decisions were always second guessed. Nothing you ever did was good enough. And that really chafed you, you really reacted very negatively to that. For other people, that might have been the style that they treasured, or the style that really got the most out of them. They might have a loss in terms of security. They might have a loss in terms of, I don't have to worry about making a decision because I know the captain's always going to make it for me.
And then blame Petty Officer Monroe for
exactly.
it. Doing his ass for a while.
When I'm asked for my opinion, I'll ask the captain and he'll give it to me. Some people have a little sense of security in knowing that they're not going to be responsible for having to take a risk or make a decision or things like that. So some of that security might have been a loss that those people may have felt. Some people may have just had a pleasant personal relationship. And so anytime there's changes in an organization that involves a person either exiting or moving to a different part of the organization, maybe even a promotion, anytime you've got a change in leadership or management, that personal relationship will be affected. I always talk about, whenever I'm dealing with new managers and new supervisors, I say, how many of you used to get together with your peers and go out on Tuesday nights for chicken wings and beer. And everybody raises their hands and say, oh, yeah. And I say, what would you do? You'd get together, you talk about work, and you complain about the boss. Oh, yeah, we would do that. I said, well, guess what? Those people that you're now supervising, they're still getting together on Tuesdays. They're still complaining about the boss, but there's a reason why you're not invited. It's because you're it. You're the one they're complaining about now. So,
oh Lord, yeah. Wow.
A different way to think about it. But yeah, so there's, like I said, there's always losses that people will feel. And depending upon how you're wired, it can be a different type of loss. So I mentioned that idea of security. People who are wired with more of a steadiness style or an S style, you know, they can be very reassured by a sense of stability and a sense of continuity. And so when that gets disrupted and that security blanket is gone, they might feel like they're adrift at sea a little bit. You know, somebody with a different style, you know, as they go through change and transition, let's take a D style or a dominant style, you know, losses they may feel is control. You know, so if an organization shifts gears or if some responsibility or decision-making authority is taken away, they might really struggle with that loss of control. And so their struggle is, how do they regain that? How do they get that back? And that's something I've seen quite a bit, you know, in these times, you know, with a lot of entrepreneurs, because, you know, that D style does tend to gravitate. You know, a lot of people who are in leadership positions or who are entrepreneurs, you know, show a lot of those traits, those behavioral traits of the dominant style. And the idea that they can't control when their doors are open, or the idea that they can't control their people coming into the office, has been a struggle, you know, for them to get through. And so how do they deal with those losses in a way that connects with them? And what that person needs might be completely different from what somebody with a different style needs, because the losses are different.
So this is what you really just talked about here, Jeremy, is the first part of a change. It happens, and then there's the morning after. And now everybody's like, oh my God, what just happened? Mm-hmm. So, all right. So, and like you mentioned, the different styles process this part differently. And I don't know if you could put a timeline. I mean, would it be like 3 weeks from when the news drops that we'll start shifting into more of a normal? What's been in your experience? And what does the next phase look like once we've gotten over the shock?
Yeah. So the shock is dramatic. And depending upon the degree of change or how expected that change may have been, it can be more or less dramatic for other people. A lot of people will get past that initial shock fairly quickly, and they'll try to reorient to what the new world looks like. And so those initial losses, you know, may be a matter of days. For some people, it might be a matter of weeks. You know, if there's a reorganization and they say, hey, at the end of the month, you know, you're going to have a new boss and you're going to be part of this new business unit, you might be processing that. But until that change actually gets implemented at the end of the month, you're really not doing anything differently. You know, so you don't know exactly what you're losing until that happens. So it can be different. And I will also say that the timeline is different for everybody. As I mentioned earlier, leaders and people who are hired in an organization typically start going through those transition phases sooner. So they're the ones that have to be cognizant to look behind them. But it's really difficult to say that you're only going to feel this loss for a week or 2 weeks or a month, because it really is different depending upon a lot of the circumstances. But once you do get past it, and managers and leaders can help people, again, just by being very specific and saying, well, here's what's not changing. Here's what you haven't lost. You know, let's go down through your list and say, what exactly are you losing? What exactly are you able to hold on to? Certain things like symbolic events might be helpful. I've gone through several building changes in my career where the office is relocated. And, you know, sometimes a memento or a souvenir helps people get through the actual loss. You know, it's hard to believe, and especially when you look at the some of the buildings I've worked in have been absolute dumps. But it's hard to, people have emotional connections to that. And so sometimes an event, sometimes a souvenir or a takeaway can help people kind of turn the page. They can help them close the book on that chapter and start moving forward. And when people do start moving into that next phase, what happens is they start feeling around and they get really frustrated by a perceived lack of progress. And Bridges calls that phase the neutral zone. And I've also heard it referred to as the mushy middle or the gray area, the in-between time, where the old structures, the old processes, the old paradigm is no longer in place, but the new world hasn't quite been fully baked yet, hasn't quite taken hold. And so what that period of time is marked by is it's frustration, it's impatience. There's a lot of confusion, you know, is a big one. People just don't know who's in charge. They don't know who's driving the bus or which way to go or how to get an answer. And it's very frustrating because this happens at a lot of levels in an organization. And if you're a manager and you've got, you know, people that are looking to you for answers and you don't have them, and then you go and you ask your director or you ask your VP and they don't have all the information, all of a sudden you're caught in the middle there. And you're frustrated because you don't have the answers, and your team is frustrated because they expect you to have the answers. And that neutral zone is actually that area where people will spend the most of their time as they go through transition. And this can be a period marked, it can last weeks, it can last months. I know from going through merger and acquisition changes, you know, it can last more than a year being in that neutral zone. And it's tough. It is. And the thing that I tell people to get through it is communicate, communicate, communicate. And I've seen this in your email newsletters as well. There is never a problem with over communicating in times of significant change. The more that you're able to communicate, even if your communication is, we don't have any more news. You know, today's news is we have no news. People at least know that you're trying. They know that you're listening to them, that you're aware that they are looking for answers and that they're curious. So I always tell people, if you're going through M&A or if you're going through any type of significant change, the more you're able to stay in front of people and the more you're able to communicate, the better they're going to feel. And so that's the number one tool that we have in our toolkit as leaders is find ways to communicate. And that can be, it should be shaken up. It shouldn't just be, well, we're going to have an all hands meeting once a month, and that's going to be how we deliver news to our people. No, do more than that. Do an email blast, do informal team huddles. If you're in the executive suite, get down on the shop floor, do a lunch and learn, you know, just have people come in and we're just going to have a Q&A, you know, donuts with the boss, you know, on a regular basis. Put up signage, put up posters. You know, have a mechanism for some feedback and some questions. But the more you're able to do to communicate and keep those lines open, the better off or the easier it's going to be to get through that neutral zone period.
Well, think about where we are now. So again, we're gonna timestamp this. So would you say right now, Jeremy, we're still with COVID-19? Are we still in that initial, like, what the hell just happened? Shocking. Loss phase, or are we now in, what'd you call it, the mushy middle?
The mushy middle. I'd say it, some of this honestly depends upon where you're listening from in the country. So I'm in Ohio, and we've been some of the losses that I've been dealing with have been the kids staying at home. You know, so back, I want to say it was maybe March 9th or 10th, they decided to close the schools, you know, for 3 weeks. And so the schools are closed until first or second week of April. And so that was a loss, because now I've got to think about, how do I keep them occupied? How do I, what am I going to do, you know, to make sure they're keeping track of their calamity day homework and all these things. So I've got past that initial loss and that initial shock. And so now I'm trying to feel it out. I'm in the mushy middle for that one.
Okay.
Whereas the stay-at-home order was more recent, and that was more dramatic. And so I had to deal with, okay, what does this mean for me now that I can't go out? You know, how does this affect some of the engagements that I've had scheduled? So I've got to deal with the prospect of, okay, you know, is this client going to cancel on me? Are we going to postpone? You know, what does it mean in terms of my revenue stream? You know, is there ways that I can, you know, factor that into my cash flow projections? So I'm dealing with those losses, but that took a day or two, and now I'm in the mushy middle of, is it possible to do this? I don't even know how to start, you know, delivering some of these things. And so I'm in that neutral zone for that particular change. You know, depending upon, you know, what our public health leaders tell us, there could be additional changes. There could be additional losses yet to be experienced. So each and every change that occurs will bring its own transition. And it's easy for us to say COVID-19 is the disruptor, is the change. But if you look at it, what it actually means for each of us is different. It's a series of different changes. And we have to look at each one of those changes and say, what are the losses we've incurred? What confusion has it created for us? How do we adapt to it? And how do we come through on the other side better off? So it's okay. it's a long response to that question, but hopefully that's clarified a little bit.
Well, maybe you should see if you can get on the president's team of briefers every day, because that made a hell of a lot of sense to me, Jeremy. So we'll take you and Dr. Fauci. The rest of them can stay home. I'll take you guys.
You know, I'm honored to hear that, and I'm flattered. But I believe in the free market, so I'm not ready for government work at this point.
Yeah, that's true. Because I guess you wouldn't be able to be completely brutally honest. But I mean, what I love about it is that, you know, we're taking what is essentially a business theory of organizational change, and we now have real examples. You've shared your personal story. We're all living through it right now. But just like anything else. And so, you know, a friend of mine, a doctor that my wife and I worked with years and years ago, he says, you know, my dad is 94. And he says he's not worried because he's seen this. He's seen World War II. He's seen all of these things that have happened. And, you know, for all of them, there is an overall overarching happy ending. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, in keeping with the theme, my hope is that 2 years from now, somebody pulls up this podcast and say, man, those two morons, what were they talking about? Well, that's ancient history, yeah, right?
That was no big deal.
That's right. I mean, we thought it was so big and look what happened and we're all doing great. And, you know, something else will happen later. But, and, you know, maybe we could almost look at that as a pattern, right? I mean, people say we were caught flat-footed, but let's not forget we got caught flat-footed at Pearl Harbor. Mm-hmm. We got caught flat-footed at 9/11. We got flat-footed at 2008, 2009. Mm-hmm. And I mean, is that a pattern that even organizations go through? We get to a point. So at some point, where I'm going is there's a next step in this, right? We're in the mushy middle. We're walking out the other side. Is this where things start getting better, or is there more pain we have to endure?
So really, when you come out of the mushy middle, you come into the final phase, which is called the new beginnings phase. And this is where things start to make sense again. This is where I talk about, you know, if you're running a marathon, and you're at mile 25, you're still running. But maybe at this point, now you see more people lining the streets and they're waving and they're applauding. Perhaps you even see the ribbon at the finish line. So you still have a little bit of ways to go, but you know that you're going to make it. You know that you're going to reach that goal. And so the new beginnings phase is when you start having a resurgence of confidence that what you've gone through, you've weathered the worst of it, and that the things that you have done, you know, to change and to, you know, to go through that, they're going to work. They're going to be successful. And you still have to do some of those same things. You still have to continue to communicate. Here's where you have to make sure that you're reinforcing the new behavior. And this is a key thing for a lot of people to think about, is no matter what change you're going through, at the end of the day, it's going to force you to do something different. So your behavior is going to have to change in reaction to whatever disruption has happened. So here's where you begin to get more comfortable with that behavior. You have confidence engaging in that behavior. You can start teaching that behavior to others. You can start, you know, helping other people and saying, hey, here's what's worked for me, and maybe this could help you as well. And so that new beginnings phase is like the sun coming up at dawn. It's illuminating the landscape, and you see, you know what, I've got through the dark of the night and things are starting to make sense for me again. I can see the outline of the trees and the houses in my neighborhood. And you know what, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. And you mentioned that idea of, you know, the changes that we've seen historically. And if we think about that and we think about learning some of the lessons from each one of those changes, here's where the concept of resilience comes in. And so the more changes that you go through individually, as a leader, or even as an organization, the more adept you are at managing change and transition effectively, the more resilience you build. And that way you can say, you know what, we got through the recession. And we learned a few lessons. We learned that we need to be a little more, you know, careful in terms of mitigating risk and identifying where risks exist in our businesses. And so when this happened, granted, it was a little bit out of the blue, but we were able to apply some lessons learned. So the more resilient you become and the more adept you are at handling change, the more suited you are to deal with changes in the future. And the next change for you might be, you know, something that you control. It might be that new market that you want to address. It might be a new product that you want to roll out to your customers. It might be a completely transformative change like the one that I did and said, you know what, I'm going to put my shingle out there and I'm going to go into business for myself. But that idea of resiliency and saying that no matter what happens, I'm confident that I'll be able to get through it. I know there's going to be pain. I know there's going to be confusion, but I also know that I've got what it takes and some resources that are going to help me get through it. So that's resiliency. And that's where I leave people when I talk about change and transition, is the better you are at this, the better you are at the next change. And, you know, I look at the name of my business. I called it Constant Consulting because, you know, as Heraclitus said thousands of years ago, the only constant in life is what? Is change. Mm-hmm. You know, so we are always dealing with a changing landscape, and COVID-19 will run its course. But then what does the next change look like? You know, look at Blockbuster Video. You know, they were disrupted by a competitor, you know, and nobody goes to the video store and watches or rents VHS videotapes anymore. You know, so it wasn't a virus that disrupted their business. It was a competitor. And at some point when the virus goes away, we're going to have to look at our marketplace and say, okay, which competitor is coming for me to create disruption? What new technology is going to create disruption? What new change in the demographics of my target market is going to disrupt my business? And if you're prepared for that, and if you're resilient, you're suited for success there.
It almost sounds to me like we're being vaccinated right now against future changes.
Exactly.
I mean, yeah. So Jeremy, your immune system's pretty high because you've gone through a bunch.
Yeah.
But for the company or the boss or the HR professional right now, who you're saying, man, I am at risk. I mean, right now I'm doing the equivalent of the mask and the mm-hmm. hand sanitizers and all those things. This is where growth happens, yes. I guess. And boy, it's, I'm not going to say that it's something that you should look forward to, because that's like the guy that, you know, hits himself in the head over and over with a baseball bat because it feels so good when he stops. But this is almost something like the more we go through this, the more we're yes. going to be resilient.
Yeah.
But the beauty of this, because you've just taken us through a journey of, you know, we start, it's terrifying, the mushy middle, then we see the sun come out and pretty soon it's the new normal. We will probably have adapted new habits yes. as a result of this. And then even the habits, you know, I often visualize what is that day going to look like when I go through security back when we start flying again. Mm-hmm. And they say, oh, Mr. Monroe, you know, just walk through. There's no more security. You just walk through. Mm-hmm. I'm probably going to get mad, right? Because what do you mean I don't have to take my shoes off anymore?
Right.
You know, because again, we're disrupted. But mm-hmm. Just keep in mind, there's going to come a time where we won't be paranoid. When somebody sneezes next to you, you don't run for the hills.
Exactly.
And we'll have to learn how to deal with that. Mm-hmm. So it's a crazy thing, but boy, I'll tell you what, no better time than now
right.
to step up. And so I want to leave us with this. Jeremy, this is what you do.
Yes.
So if somebody's saying, man, you mean I got to go through this alone? The answer is, of course you don't. Because fortunately, there's people like Jeremy out there mm-hmm. who even virtually through Zoom or phone or whatever, mm-hmm. you can be right alongside somebody who's going through this and guide them through with the tools you've just explained.
Exactly.
So Jeremy, how do we get a hold of you? The Dr. Fauci of change.
So you can reach me. You can take a look at my website, which is constantconsulting.us. And you've got a number of my offerings available on that site. So constantconsulting.us. You can email me. The email is jeremy@constantconsulting.us. Jeremy is spelled J-E-R-E-M-Y. And you can even dial me up. So you can find my phone number on the website. I'll
I'll even give it to you now. I don't mind. And if, you know, I answer the phone all the time. So, but reach me at 937-470-3330. And whatever the change opportunity that you're looking at, whether it's, you know, something that's reacting to COVID-19 and you've got a lot of disruption, maybe you need to learn how to, how do I manage a virtual workforce? How do I deal with these work from home policies or work from home practices? You know, I've got a lot of experience in doing that and I can certainly help. But whatever it is, even if it's not related to COVID, if it's an acquisition maybe that you're struggling with, or if it's a new leadership team, those are all experiences that I've been through and that I've helped teams and organizations with. So I've got a lot of, as I said, I've got a lot of scar tissue on how we've been able, on how we've gone through it. And I've been able to guide dozens of teams and individuals, you know, through the healthy way and through the effective way of getting through change and transition. So definitely use the website, find me on LinkedIn, call me up, email me, you know, whatever method works best for you. I'd be thrilled to have a conversation with anybody who's listening to this.
Yeah, that's great. And, you know, I can personally endorse Jeremy. We've worked together and it's just an awesome guy. So please don't wait for this to end before you start taking some action. Mm-hmm. Let Jeremy come alongside you and help. Jeremy, thank you so much for taking some time out of your day. I have to tell you, it's probably time to go back and stop your kids from arguing right now, right?
Well, you're certainly welcome, Mac. I appreciate having the opportunity to chat. I treasure all the conversations that we have, and I appreciate your support. And you're right, it's getting to that time where they're going to have to get in timeout. And so I need to go put my referee shirt on and blow the whistle. So.
Awesome. All right, my friend, you take care.
All right, you do the same, Mac. Talk to you next time.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the HR Oxygen Podcast. We hope you found something today that will relieve your stress, feed your soul, and pump you up to face another day. At Boss Builders, we want to let you know that we appreciate the hard work you do every day as an HR professional. And as a reminder, always make sure to adjust your own oxygen mask before attempting to help those around you. Be well.